Hello, and welcome to That's Not Spit, It's Condensation.
Hello, and welcome to That's Not Spit, It's Condensation. I'm Ryan Beach, and today I am joined by Dr. Joseph Gray. Joe is the Associate Director of Bands at the University of North Alabama and also the trumpet teacher at UNA. And he and I connected when I did a class out there a couple of, 3 years ago. And then he asked me if I'd be interested in team teaching. So 2 years ago in the fall, we started working together, and I've really enjoyed our time together. It's been great to talk shop and to have an opportunity for me to be able to just experiment and explore some pedagogical ideas. And that's actually what we want to talk about today in this episode. We're just kind of going to go over a method that Joe has developed called IISP for being able to be more efficient and effective in the practice room, being able to break things down, being able to find problems and solve problems, things like that. So before we dive in, I just want to say thank you, Joe, for being here in my home and being willing to chat with me.
Absolutely.
So before we get into what IISP is, it might be kind of nice. Everybody loves a good origin story, right? So it might be kind of nice actually to hear how you developed this this method of practicing and just, yeah, take us through that.
Sure. So I teach at the University of North Alabama, and our students are primarily rural high school, county high school kids. We've got a studio of about anywhere between 15 and 20. And my first year there, we had a smaller studio when I first arrived. I think I had six students. And I remember working on one of my students' jury pieces, and I'm pretty sure it was Row Parts on Dante and Allegro. And they got to the triplet section on the second page and played through it. And there was a couple of mistakes in there with some rhythmic things, some articulation things. I asked them how it went. They said, oh, I need to work on this and this. And I was like, okay, so let's work on that. And I said, how do you want to address that? And they went back and just started the entire section over and just played it down again. And that just had me thinking, not even really, I guess it was maybe something that not necessarily had come natural to me, but I didn't really have to think about how to break things down. And I was realizing that my students didn't really understand how to break things down and work on them in a deeper, more efficient manner. And they would just play the section, mess something up, say, okay, well, I messed this thing up, and then go back and just run the section again without actually working on anything in between. And I was thinking, well, maybe I should come up with some sort of a system that allowed them to, like, a little step-by-step process of this is how to take something challenging, something you're having issues with, and breaking it down into manageable chunks or bite-sized pieces in order to see that improvement, work on things, and then putting it back together towards the end.
Yeah, for me, it's like a kind of a really important thing that, you know, through the GOLD method that I had sort of worked with for a while, and we work with our students. I think many students are very capable, mm-hmm. intelligent, but sometimes, like you said, people don't necessarily come to these ideas just automatically. And so having some sort of a structure that you can say, well, start with this step and then go to this step and go to this step. Like, for me, it's not important that someone practices that way, exactly that way long term, but rather it's just a way to get started that's going to be more, I guess, efficient than maybe just starting at the beginning and running it again.
Yeah, and I think that it's not really something that I had necessarily had to have a system like this in place, but I was just trying to think about what it's like when I encounter something that it's something challenging and something that I'm trying to improve. What are the steps that I go through in order to break it down, work on it, and put it back together. So that's where we came up with the IISP. The step one was, okay, I played this phrase of music and I messed something up in the middle of it. Step one is, can you identify what the problem was? Can you identify the area in which the problem occurred? Can you also identify the pedagogical or technical aspect that allowed you not to perform that the way in which you'd liked? So that's step one, is identify. Step two is then isolate. So this was kind of the impetus behind everything, is because I had students that just would not isolate. They would just go, go from the top again. Let me see what happens this time. And so step two was isolate it down to that one area that you've identified as the problem area. And then you also want to isolate it down to maybe that technical aspect that is giving you troubles. So, once you've identified what the problem is, once then you've isolated that specific bar of music or that even that specific interval or that specific technique, the next thing, the next step beyond that is then to take it in and simplify it in order to put it into a little chunk or a little phrase, a subphrase, or an interval or a slur or a single note articulation that you are going to be able to achieve and do it well. So the simplification is a super important process. Almost always starts with slowing it down. Right. And then I guess in that respect, isolating it down is also a portion, is also a way of simplifying it as well, because you're then taking it out of context and simplifying it down to this one level that allows you to focus directly on that one thing. So slowing it down is a form of simplification. Another form of simplification is, let's say it's a multiple tongue passage, is then to just take the multiple tongue out and just play the notes, right? Or take the articulation out altogether and just slur. It's another form of simplification. And then the next step beyond that is then putting it back in context. That's the last step. The P is putting it back in context, which is obviously an incredibly important step, because you've broken it down, you've isolated it down to this thing, you've simplified all of the material down to this one aspect that you're trying to improve. Well, it doesn't mean anything if then you're not going to try to put it back into the context of the piece. So putting it back into context would then be speeding it back up a little bit, you know, little by little, or adding in the measure beforehand and the measure afterwards, slowly adding back in the articulation, putting it back in context. And then by the end of this process, hopefully you can just put it back together in the entire phrase.
Yeah. So I think one thing right out of the gate that would be worth talking about is recording, right? Because unless you have a teacher, which most people should at some stage in their development have a teacher, but when you're not with your teacher and you need accurate feedback to be able to even have that first step, you know, when you're playing, maybe when you become more and more, I guess, skilled at getting, like, managing your playing, maybe you can get some of this feedback while you're playing. But generally speaking, you're not going to be as accurate with identifying issues from what you remember versus just listening to a recording. So I guess then the next question would be, how do you think about how much to incorporate recording? Is it when you're having a problem? Is it all the time? Like, what is your way that you would recommend incorporating this in a way that feels like it's going to serve IISP?
I think that it's super important to record. And hopefully when our students are sitting down in the practice room and they're working on their jury pieces or their scales or their wind ensemble literature, their orchestral excerpts, that they're recording regularly. I think all of us can probably admit that we don't record as much as we should, but it is a really important step in the process. Like you had mentioned, it's really important to have that feedback. Obviously, having a teacher is probably the most important feedback, because as you know, the students, they don't know what they don't know. So they might play something and they might play all the notes right, and they say, "That was really great." But, you know, with a teacher's ear, maybe it's, "Well, you played it all right, but it was 25 cents sharp the entire time with a pretty bad sound and your articulations were inconsistent." But the student might not know those things yet.
Sure.
So
yeah,
it's really hard to replace the feedback of an experienced ear. However, when you're not going to have an experienced ear there for every time you're sitting in a practice room. So for our students, it's really important that they can record. And we've talked about this before. When you're performing on the trumpet, when you're playing through a passage on the trumpet, you can't actively be analyzing what you're playing while fully concentrating on what you're trying to create. So as a student or just any of us as a performer, when we're playing through a piece of music, we should be going after having 100% of our brain focused on the creation of the sound. Hopefully we've got the recorder going on at that point, you're recording. And then after you're done focusing on the creation, press stop on the recorder, and then you can replay back. And that's where we can switch our brains over to analytical, right? So let's say that you're giving yourselves, like in the gold method, you're giving yourselves three attempts at this specific chunk or this specific excerpt. The first time through would be, let me record this. Let me record this. I'm just going to play it through, record it. After that, you stop, you listen back to it. At this point, between the first and the second reps is where you would address some IISP. You would be doing some of the deeper work before you get into that second repetition. So you're playing pictures in an exhibition, and then you've played it through, you've played promenade through, and then you completely cack the A flat octave, right? So that's on the first repetition. So your first IISP, your first deep work in between the first and the second repetition is going to be breaking down that octave. So you've identified what the issue is. Number two, you're going to isolate it down to that octave, right? So in forms of simplification, maybe you don't start with an octave leap. Maybe you start, instead of starting on a low A flat and jumping up to a high A flat, you start on an E flat. You know, and then you go from E flat to A flat and then start maybe stepping that down, making that interval whole. From there, let's say that you've got that octave worked out, then you would put it back into context, starting to put some notes around it. And also, you know, obviously with that excerpt in particular, putting it back into context is part of the problem, being able to start from the beginning of that excerpt and make it up through that A flat octave jump. So let's say you've done your IISP, you've worked on that octave. Second repetition, maybe you don't record it this time. Maybe you just do your repetition of it, play it all the way through, get to the end, see how it felt. IISP a little bit more on the things that you need to work on before you get into that third repetition. Record the third repetition. And then I think that this is super important. Listen back. See if that deep work that you've done in between the repetitions shows up in that third rep. And if it does, congratulate yourself a little. Get yourself a pat on the back, which we don't do enough of. But I think it's important to be able to hear just within that one sitting that you were able to start in a certain place and end in a certain place. And this may have all taken all of 5 or 10 minutes, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting you even bring up the time frame, because as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking like, how can we know that this is better than just running it a second time and hoping that it's better, right? Because it seems like it's so much more work than just like playing it again, right? So I'm curious for your take on, I mean, I know what I would say, or I know at least the pitch I would give, and I'm curious for what you would say as to why would it be preferable to go and dig in like that versus just trying it again. And like, if it's better the second time, it's like, well, there we go. Like, why is it better to you?
For sure. So listening to students practice their scales is probably a pretty accurate example, or it's a pretty useful example of this. Sometimes when you have a student practicing a scale, they will just be focusing on the fingerings and they will mess up a fingering and they'll say, well, shoot, I got to do it again. And then they will just do it again, rep it, all the, you know, just keep pounding the head against the wall until they can push down the buttons at the same time.
Yeah.
Or at the correct time, and they make it through the scale. But if you were to want to make deep and meaningful changes to the way in which you play the trumpet, you have to go through this process of breaking it down and focusing on this one aspect and deeply ingrain that overcoming of that challenge within your brain. And I think what then that becomes is it becomes something that is, it becomes something that then it can be applied to all areas of trumpet playing, right?
Yeah,
than just playing through the scale and pressing down the right buttons at the right time.
Yeah. And for me, I think that part of what you're doing is, it's not, if you think about progress in a 5 to a 10 minute span, like maybe it's not quite as quick. Mm-hmm. But if you're thinking as progress as like a 1 month or a 1 year or a 5 year thing, you're basically front loading so much of the work. And this is why for me in the gold method, it's important to set boundaries because you basically aren't going to be able to do all the work you want to do in one sitting. So you're basically saying, how can I set up a system that makes it so I can just chip away, do really great work that's going to stick with me tomorrow, and then do great work that day that's going to stick with me the next day? Because if you can practice that way, 1 year from now, you're no longer dealing with those problems anymore. You're dealing with new problems that came about because you improved. And I think there's a lot of people who struggle with the same types of problems for long periods of time. And it's because they're not deeply getting in there and figuring out what's going on in their playing and how can they fix it. And so that to me is why this is important, is because you're investing in like a long-term version of yourself that is so much more important, especially if you want to be high functioning, a high functioning performer. But as you were just talking about, like it's about all aspects of trumpet. It transcends trumpet in general, and it goes to like anything you want to do. If you want to see meaningful progress at anything, this is the kind of process you go through. It doesn't matter. And we've talked about how with our students, we want them to be the best trumpet players they can be, because the best musicians and the best trumpet players are going to yield the best band directors, mm-hmm. right? The people who understand how to solve problems, how to take data that their band is giving them and deal with it. They know things about how to apply different styles of music. And so we're not just seeing it as teaching them about the trumpet. We're seeing it as teaching them about how to be very good band directors that can help their students get better the same way they know how to get better too.
Yeah, absolutely. Just take one step back. We all know that music is not like a history class. You cannot cram, like you might be able to cram for a history test and do pretty well. You cannot cram for a jury or for a recital. Like that's just not the way it works when right. it comes to preparing music. Yeah. So that is why this is important to the very specific thing of practicing the trumpet, right?
Yeah.
Because you're hoping to develop a strong foundation of technique, of things that are going to stick with you long term, not that you're just going to have to then cram again for, you know, a couple of weeks down the road. But back to the other thing that you were discussing about our students in particular, not many of them are going to go on to be professional trumpet players when they leave the University of North Alabama. Most of them are going to go on to be band directors. Some of them are not even going to go on to pursue a career in music. And it's our hope that with the students in our studio, that we are instilling skills that are going to help them in everything that they do in life. And the trumpet is going to be the medium for us to help them develop these skills. And it's really about facing challenges and how do you overcome these challenges? How do you identify problem areas? How can you think of creative ways of addressing these problem areas and overcoming them? And I think it's probably the most important and meaningful thing that we do as applied teachers. And something also that's really interesting to think about is our influence is over a group of 15 to 20 trumpet players in any given year. But then these students are, you know, let's say half of them then go on to be band directors, and each of their bands has 50 or 60 people in it. And then their influence is going to be, what is that? Like, let's say 10 of them go on to be band directors of 60 member groups. That's like 600 students.
Right.
Right. It's just, we would like them to be able to influence those students in the best way possible, and create, you know, a program in which they are developing their students to become fantastic and successful human beings.
Right. Yeah. For me, this, like, I can very clearly apply this to the video stuff that I've gotten better at, where when I first started out, I would watch some videos of people on YouTube or whatever, and I would see, okay, I want to try to create that. Like, and then I would create a video that's likened to recording, right? I recorded myself doing an effort. And then I would look at it and be like, okay, like, what are some differences that I can see right now? Like, if I gave it to some much better, much more seasoned, experienced person than me, I'm sure that they would have way more stuff that I could, but what can I see right now that I know I could improve on? Okay, the lighting doesn't look as good as these other. And then so I go research and try to figure out, how do I improve my lighting? Or the sound isn't quite as good. And how do I make better sound? It's like you're looking for specific targeted things that you yourself at any stage can say, I can improve this because I understand it. And then obviously you go seek out coaching or teaching or whatever. That's going to help shore up the things that you just don't know. That's like why it's important to do that, obviously. So I feel like I've gotten significantly better at video in a very short amount of time, because the entirety of the time that I've been doing video, I've been practicing it like what we're talking about in this episode. So for me, that's a really cool application.
Yeah.
And it's why I care deeply about sharing these messages that we're talking about here, is that, yeah, you're really providing a framework for how to learn anything. And you're just saying, okay, well, as a trumpet player, this is the way that I'm going to practice learning about this.
Yeah.
I'm just going to use the trumpet to learn how to learn, basically. Yeah,
absolutely. And you know, it's funny, is earlier today when we were talking about the you shoot hoops with your kids, and it was and you were talking about how much better you've got at shooting free throws, right? And what did you do to work on those free throws? Well, you did have someone that was giving you feedback, right? That, that said, Harry, well, you need to try and do this thing first. And that first thing was not to keep throwing the ball at the basket hoping that you got the ball in,
right,
but was to go right up under the basket and take the ball and just one hand toss it in, right? So in that sense, that was IISP. Sure. Right. The issue that you had identified was, I can't make free throws consistently. Right. So then you isolated the shooting of the free throw. You simplified it by moving up to the basket and using just one hand to toss it in. And then I'm sure you put it back into context by slowly backing out and getting back to the free throw. Right. And that was just, that's just one small example of how this process really can, you can use to identify issues in just about any area and find creative ways to break it down, simplify it, put it back in context.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love this structure because it's, and I, you know, I think people, myself included, like as a mnemonic device, is that what, or an acronym or whatever it's called? Not a it's an acronym.
Right.
I like acronyms, you know, because they're easier to remember these things, like the GOLD method, IISB. But it's really just deliberate practice.
Yes.
Like, that's what we're talking about here. Yep. We're talking about turning your practice. I've started to use this language a little bit with our students, turning it into, you're a scientist. You're that's a musical scientist. You're not just banging your head up against the wall. You're actually thinking, what experiment am I doing? How can I like change a variable here to create a different result? What happens when I do that? You're just providing us a structure of how to perform like how to go about doing the experiments and structuring them. And so I hope that anyone listening, this is helpful for them to think about how we can better get more out of our practice, I guess, if that's a way to say it.
And something else that this reminds me of is that, you know, as classical musicians, we don't get to be incredibly creative all of the time because we're expected to play exactly what's on the page in a specific style, very in tune and very consistent. But this process is an outlet for creativity in terms of getting in there and playing around and seeing what exactly, like what you said, what variables can you apply to then make the product better? What ways can you simplify it in order to achieve the goal? And then how are you going to get, once you've got it broken down to that small, minute thing, I mean, then you get to be a little bit creative in how I'm going to put it back into context. And then that might even create other challenges that then you need to think through and overcome. And it can be pretty, look, I'm not going to say it's incredibly fun, because playing trumpet and then experiencing challenges isn't always a fun thing. But if you can go into it with that sort of playful, creative determination, I think it can be pretty fun.
I also think if you take fun and you set it aside, because obviously we want to have fun, but many things that are rewarding, fun should not be the goal.
Yes.
But I definitely think it makes practice more interesting.
Yes.
Like, it's not boring to practice like that. And I know a lot of people sometimes walk into the practice room feeling like, this is boring. Like, I have to do this. We were just reading a book with our studio called Chop Wood, Carry Water. And one of the chapters talked about reframing, saying, I have to do something versus I want to do something in the mental space it puts you in. So instead of saying, I have to go practice, it makes you feel like this is going to be hard. It's going to be drudgery or something like that. To say, I want to practice because I get the chance to dig deep and get better. I think this is a framework with which that makes it more accessible, I think.
Yeah. Sorry, this kind of reminds me of something else. I've gotten pretty into long distance running over the last few years. And there is definitely that same idea in that we experience in like the long distance running community is waking up and feeling like you, like, because it's kind of the same thing. Like for every week, I've got a program in which I know like Mondays are my rest day. Tuesdays are kind of move and get my legs working. Wednesday, I've got to do speed work and it's like kind of like a workout. Thursday's recovery day. Friday's small mileage. Saturday is going to be a really long run. Sunday is going to be kind of a cool down run. But it gets a little bit, not monotonous, but waking up every morning at like 4:30, 4:40 in the morning, you're waking up and it's like, oh, I have to go and do this thing. As opposed to switching that around to waking up and saying, I get to go and do this thing. You know, I had a foot injury. I ran a marathon in January and I had a foot injury shortly thereafter. And experiencing the loss and not being able to get up and run, it really made me appreciate right now getting up. And it's like, oh, I get to get up and go run today because my foot's not hurting anymore. And it's been really great. So sorry, that was a little sidetrack there. But it's something else that is really interesting about my little journey with long distance running, like your jury or like a recital performance, you can't cram for a marathon. You're not going to get 26 miles of training and then and just getting that in 1 week and then being able to do it the next day. Really what you need is about 6 months in order to even get that distance up. And then for those 6 months, it becomes, you know, you start your training and then 6 months later, you get to run that marathon that you've trained for. And then it's after that, that you get to do another leap. And then you try to make progress on that next training block, but it's certainly not a cramming thing. It is certainly a long haul. You've got to be willing to get to it every day. And then 6 months down the road, you kind of get to see the work that you did over those 6 months. You
know? Yeah. I think that's a really tough thing about training. And in the context you're talking about, music is obviously the same context that sometimes we want like the tried and true best way to do something so that we can guarantee that we're going to get better and see the results we want. But the human body doesn't work like that. Like, things take time to evolve. And so I guess one of the reasons I felt like this episode for me was important to, or this topic was important to talk about, is I really don't think you can guarantee anything. You can't guarantee any progress. You can't guarantee you're going to get where you want to go. But all you can do is try to set yourself up with the best system possible that will get you there. So regardless if you want to be in an orchestra or a military band or a chamber ensemble, or you want to be a soloist, or you want to be a collegiate professor, or you want to be a band director at any level, you know, pursuing those goals is important. And it's a wonderful thing, but we can't guarantee, like, I'm living proof I'm not at the stage or the career stage that I wanted to be at when I was younger. But I feel like now, especially, I practice in a way that I'm trying to give myself the best possible chance to get there if that's what I wanted to do. And my goals have changed and all that kind of stuff, but I'm not sure I always practice that way, if that makes sense. Like, I think I always worked hard, but I don't think I was always practicing with the mindset, how can I maximize this time so I give myself the best possible chance to establish the best habits that I can, so that long term I'm like always fueling and feeding into like, quote, the best version of myself or the best performer that I can be.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's something that just kind of reminded me of was, how do you know, what was the term? How do you know you're putting your ladder on the right house?
Right. Yeah, it comes from the, just for some context, I read it in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People but we just read it in Chopwood Carry Water. It's the idea that we're all trying to climb this ladder of success, and it's just a shame that some people climb the ladder and they get to the top only to realize that the ladder is leaning up against the wrong house or the wrong wall. Yeah.
So what's interesting with that in regards to anything like what we're talking about right now with music or long distance running or being a videographer, I don't know, you would know more about that than I would, but is that, with any of these like technical aspects or these pedagogical aspects, I know I struggled with this thought when I was an undergrad for sure, but being able to commit yourself to an idea or a pedagogy or a routine, and then I was always kind of second guessing it and being like, is this the system that's going to help me out? Is this like this pedagogical idea, this technical concept, is this the thing that's going to help me? And then sometimes I would, after a week or two, without seeing any improvements, then just give up on it and then move to something else. But, you know, something that's, it's interesting maybe about that ladder on the wrong house is when it comes to something long-term like this, you might not know if the ladder's on the right house until you're a few rungs up and you've actually given it time to see if there's any improvements. You might not see these improvements right away. Yeah. But we have a student like that right now, who is very interested and very, excited about getting better at the trumpet. And then in this age when everything's available online and YouTube, every couple of days he finds something else that he's interested in trying out. And it's like, well, what about that thing we were just talking about last week? You know, where is that thing you were very, very excited about? Oh, you've already moved on. Okay.
Yeah.
But you know, that can be pretty detrimental to the success of our students or the improvement of our students. And I think it's really important to commit to something. And that's what I love about the GOLD method, is that when you start that thing out, you're not thinking about, okay, where am I going to be at the end of this week? You're thinking about, okay, well, where am I going to be at the end of this month? Or yeah, where am I going to be at the end of these 2 months?
Yeah. And I've always liked, especially at the level that I play at now, I've liked that, you know, moving the goalpost further away. So I'm not trying to decide day to day, am I getting better, or even week to week, if I'm getting better. I'm thinking 1 month from, like 1 month apart, am I seeing the progress that I want to see, stuff like that. So that's really, for me, a helpful aspect of the GOLD method. And what you were talking about, so kind of steering it back over here to IISP, I think using our student as an example, information is good. Like, information is good. There's nothing wrong with like going out there and listening to as many different people as you can and getting as many ideas as you can. I think what I like about IISP is that it provides a framework for how to implement some of that stuff. So like when our student would say, I found this thing and I wanted to try that. And he would share that with me. My question was always, why? Like, in what way is this going to help you? And I asked that question because to try to steer away from just like, well, let's see what happens, and steering it towards this, like, it's serving a purpose. This is helping me simplify something, or this is helping me get over, or this is a fundamental thing that's going to help me better identify and better overcome issues in like various phrases I might have. And so, yeah, information is a good thing, I think, for sure. It's just making sure that it's always in a proper context. And that's why that's one of the things I like about IISP and that structure, because it's, the context is easy to figure out.
Yeah. And with that, I don't know if it's not every time that I sit down to practice, do I sit there and think to myself, all right, let me identify what the issue is. Okay, now let me isolate it down. You know, it's just, I was just trying to think of the process in which I actually practice, and that just happens to take shape. And I think that as the students start to develop this more, they might not have to actually think about the steps of the process. That's just the way that they practice,
yeah.
You know, is by that kind of deeper thought.
It's a great point, yeah. I remember learning about a system of, I've shared it with some of our students, a system of like organizing music, like these little groupings, right? Like this note goes to this note, or these notes pick up to this note. And when I first did it, it was really helpful to mark it all in there, but I've done it just long enough now that I feel like I can almost like start to hear it as I'm playing, or I can identify those groups while I'm playing without having to do it. So that's a great point that you're also investing in sort of rewiring just the way you think about practicing in general. And that there's no way that that can't benefit you, or it won't benefit you long term to rewire it. So I guess like some of the premise of what I'm trying to answer is rooted in the question, why does this matter? Like, why does it matter to think this deeply? And we've already answered that question a little bit, but I still think it still is like kind of a choice. Like there are times where maybe I pick up the instrument and I don't really care about getting better today. I just want to play the instrument and enjoy playing it. Those days happen. But I think when I sit down and I say, okay, I want to learn this piece of music, or I want to dig into this thing or whatever, it's like these structures make it so that like there's such a clear path forward for how to do that. And I think some people have the, I want to enjoy playing the trumpet down, but less of that clear path forward of how to break things down and like specifically get better. That's my take on it, at least.
Yeah, I agree. And just like what we were mentioning, I think the reason why it is important is because what we've just been talking about is it kind of rewires the way in which you're thinking about overcoming these problems. And then that finds itself into any other aspect of your life or your professional life, you know, even if it's outside of music, is basically being able to analyze and identify problems and then just being able to find creative ways, creative solutions of overcoming those problems.
Yeah. I find myself thinking that like semi-regularly now, you know, like what's the best way to grow this grass? It's like, well, what's the process? Like identify the problem. We don't have any grass. Like, you know, it's like, I mean, that's a silly example, but there are applications like that. And I've started to think of many more things as problems and solution dynamics rather than just like, I don't know what to do, so to speak.
Or just jumping in without thinking of the best way to do something or you know. I definitely have found that when it comes to fixing things around the house or overcoming or just faced with things like that, where I'm actually thinking through the steps of the process of fixing the thing before. Right. Sometimes my wife is like, no, we just need to start doing it. And I'm like, wait. Let's think about how we're going to do this for a second before we start, you know?
Yeah. So I think it has a lot of applications. I wanted to share a quick story. I know that I've shared this with you, but I think it's a cool story for those who are listening. We have a student that he cares a lot. He's learning a piece called I Remember by Dana Wilson. And that piece is tough to do like with the gold method, because there's so much that the timing is changing left and right. And it's hard to do it in the way that I've structured. And what's interesting is he isn't necessarily taking the metronomic, you know, scaling, I guess, but he's taking the, I'm going to do 3 attempts. And so he would send me recordings of the first, second, third attempt, and he would say, this is what I'm noticing, this is what I want to try to get better at. And that was great. And he was getting better. It was slow progress, but it was progress. And then 1 week, he sent me a recording, and it was like there was something different. It was a little bit more ownership. It wasn't just that there was improvement. It felt like it was part of him. And I was like, did you do anything different? And basically he described a process of like saying, well, in between the repetitions, he more or less did really focused on trying to implement some of this IISP stuff and solving the problems that he was coming up with rather than just stopping it. He was identifying them, but he wasn't kind of taking the next steps to simplify it and work through it. And it was interesting to me to see the difference and to hear the difference. There was, again, like he was doing well. It just felt like it was more part of him. He owned it more. It felt like he was making like musical statements rather than just trying to kind of read the page and hold it together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you have any stories of students.
Well, I mean, just talking about him in general, this is interesting because that in a nutshell is what most of the students come in with is they can identify the problem. they can hear when a note is wrong. Maybe they can't identify it on some of the level that we want them to develop in our studio. But, you know, initially you're going to be able to, the student's going to know if they played a wrong note or if they cracked something, right? But the inner workings of isolating and simplifying and putting it back in context, those were the skills and the steps that the students did not,
right. It
didn't come naturally to them. And that is kind of what I'm finding in our studio, is that for the most part, we have to teach the kids how to practice, you know?
Of course. Yeah.
And those particular steps are the ones, but just back with that student, some of my favorite lessons that I've had with him have been this semester on that piece. And what we've done is just not using a metronome, but we'll just turn on iReal Pro and have that. I turn down the piano, turn down the bass, and just leave the drum set on. So we have that groove. And then taking these larger, because I don't know if obviously you're familiar with it. I don't know if the listeners are super familiar with it, but there will be some portions of it that are at 60 beats a minute, and it will have like triplet 30 second notes, you know, or things like this, where you look at it and it takes you a second to realize exactly what the rhythm is or be able to actually count through it. So a lot of my lessons with our student this semester have been taking that phrase and just doing IISP, breaking it down to that one beat, you know, and sometimes even just a half a beat, and being like, all right, student, this is how this goes. Bubba doo bop, bubba doo bop, bubba doo bop. And then we would just go back and forth and be like, all right, we have that half beat. Now let's put the other half of the beat, which is maybe 430 seconds before it. And it's da 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 do, something like that. Da 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 da, something, you know. And then we would just go back and forth on that, and then putting it back in context. And I really feel like this semester, just by spending an hour doing that, sometimes literally just an hour of us going back and forth on these little portions of that piece, he's actually learning how to practice. And he's been with us for 3 years. But sometimes for students, you have to hold their hand through it. Sometimes for students, it's always going to be more beneficial for the student to see the process in action than it is for us to speak about it. Right.
Yeah. I was thinking about one of the lessons I had on Monday, just this past Monday. We're filming this on a Friday. So Friday, April 5th. So this was Monday, April 1st. And the student's playing the Defia, or Defala, I guess.
It's Defia. He's going to try and tell you it's Defala, dude. It's Defia.
And there was a spot that even I was like, I had to like simplify it into like, just I'm only going to sing like half of this measure, and then try to figure out how it's like, I sang the first two beats, mm-hmm. and then, okay, now we're going to add the third beat in there. I mean, it was like, I couldn't even sing one measure at a time. Because
that one's written in 3/8, and then it's got some syncopation 30-second notes.
It just was breaking my brain. And so half of the lesson was like, okay, I need to figure out what's going on here so that I can effectively try to communicate how I think about this. And so, I think what we're talking about here is at the crux of so much learning. And I had a comment on a YouTube video. It was on the habits one that I did recently. And someone wrote, this video is, he's like, something like, great tips, Captain Obvious. And I was like, okay, I'll bite. And I wrote like, I'm not sure what you mean by that. And basically this individual was like, I think this video is great. It was more or less saying, I think some of these tips or some of these things are like obvious, like things that people just sort of do.
Well, I'm glad they're obvious to that person.
Well, and I think that's kind of the point, is like, we're sort of talking in a way that even I'm listening to us and I'm thinking, okay, like,
of course,
this is like, of course, but like, I just think there are people who, like, maybe don't quite deeply understand this. Or you're talking about students that we say this to all the time and still don't own this part of the process.
Yes.
So I think it's worth talking about. And I think it's worth trying to simplify the process of talking about how to practice into some actionable steps.
Yes.
That then individuals can build their own system around this structure. It's like you're providing like a loose blueprint for how to build the walls of a house, but you get to decorate it however you want. But the structure of that is you sort of have to have certain, like every house has like a foundation and they build the walls like the same way. They may look different, but they don't build walls differently in different houses just for fun. You know, it's because they do it because that's how the house is going to be most structurally sound. I think that's kind of what we're talking about. You can apply this in any way you want, but as long as these pillars, the IISP is there, you're probably going to be getting a lot out of your practice.
Yeah. And I mean, this is not, I'm not reinventing the wheel. This is just, I'm literally like, this is just how I practice. And I'm trying to find the best way to describe it to my students who may not know how to practice yet. Right. So this is probably not going to be groundbreaking information for a lot of your listeners, you know, and it maybe shouldn't be, but for our students that are learning how to practice and learning how to be effective, this is a great process. And then just understanding the process on a deeper level then allows you to, you know, to use it in different portions of your life, just understanding that,
right. You know? Well, I think we fairly thoroughly covered this topic. Are there any sort of final thoughts you have that you wanted to talk about that you didn't, that we haven't said at this point?
Not really. You know, the ISP is in my opinion, this deep work is something that works best when it's in, well, like with the gold method, where it's worked into a framework that you have for a long-term goal. This is what you do in the daily practice. This is what you do in the minute to by minute in your practice room. It works best when it's coupled with a long-term plan.
Sure. Well, thank you, Joe, for going over that. And like I said, I know about this, but it's always good for me, you know, as much as we talk, it's always good to go over this stuff where I can keep getting clearer and clearer pictures of how you think about things when we're team teaching. So this is helpful for me. I really hope that it was interesting and helpful for our listeners. So thank you for sharing. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Okay. If anybody is interested, they were interested in UNA, or they're just interested in asking you more questions about IISP, how would someone get a hold of you?
You can email me at jgray6, that's jgray6@una.edu.
All right. So take advantage of that if you want more communication with Joe. I want to thank Brandon Yoakum for his work on mastering this episode of the podcast. You can check out Brandon's work at epiphanyrecordingstudio.com. And most of all, I would like to thank you for listening.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you in the next one.
Bye.